Hi everyone, welcome back to Uncensored. I'm Marianne, your host from Yachts Mermaids, and today I have a special guest. Her name is Margarita Aman, and she is a former chief stew. She has also worked in cruise ships in her career, and she is now the CEO and founder of IMS, which also has an app called Crystal for interior management on vessels. So thank you, Margarita, for being here today with me, and welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So Margarita is very, what do you call it, passionate about discrimination, especially since what just happened in America with Floyd, and that really just kind of was that cherry on the cake for her, and or like she said, what broke the camel's back. And this really kind of allow her to dive a little bit deeper into inequality and, you know, in yachting, let's say, because this, she's still in the industry. So when I talk about inequality in yachting and, you know, what's happening in America and how this actually affected you and just kind of like gave you that drive, that push to say, you know, enough is enough, fuck this shit, we're gonna talk about it, you know, what comes up for you?
A lot of memory and emotions. So like you said, I worked in the yachting industry. Before that, I worked 10 years ashore commercially in hotels and in restaurants, open places for former bosses and similar. There you experience the occasional racism, not as much sexism though, compared to yachting. So then 2008, 2009, I joined the yachting industry, and it hit me like a baseball bat. I was so shocked by pretty much everyone's behavior. But you just take it in. You take it as this is normal. This is what it is.
You said that you were hit like a bat, right?
Baseball bat, yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about what was that like? What did you actually experience that you were so shocked, you know, to actually, you were like, what's happening, you know?
Yeah, well, there's this typical white boys club that they don't take you serious. It starts from captains to engineers to deckhands. It's just chief officers who think they are mightier than you, and they feel the need to shush you when you want to contribute to, let's say, a drill or a crew meeting. And sure, maybe some people say, oh, you have an attitude or you have an edge, but I'm not condescending when I'm speaking with people. And yeah, if you, for example, made a suggestion for something, if it would be a blonde stewardess repeating that, it would be much more heard by them. Situations like that, basically, where you get then singled out. Or because I come, I was born and raised in Germany, you learn things to do very systematically. So then you suddenly get the other side of racism, where you be called a Nazi for being too strict or trying to do things too accurate, up to the point where they really isolate you, not allowing you to be part of the crew. Only the British and the Australian girls and boys hanging out. And then even though I was still a regular stewardess, I wasn't with them. I'm also not a big drinker. Maybe that didn't help either. So, yeah, you kind of, you get singled out a lot.
Okay, so you experienced this inequality, and it was a shocker for you. And then you decided, well, you know what? I'm going to check out cruise ships because, you know, it could potentially be better. And tell us a little bit about your transition into cruise ships, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in 2008, 2009, that was really a shocker for me when I joined yachting, because I wasn't aware of the British culture when you spend with them every day, all day. And again, 2008, 2009, it was different to a comparison, all the British people I've met in the last decades and more. But yeah, I really felt that elitism or that inequality comes from all sides, from girls as much as it came from boys, from high positions as much as it came from low positions. And you really felt that there's no real friend, even though behind the scenes they would come and then speak with you and say, hey, it's not so bad, she does or he doesn't mean it this way. But then in the group, they would still be their group. And that I didn't experience on land. And I thought, okay, maybe it's the lack of professionalism, because they were looking up on YouTube how to handle brass or polished silver. And I was shocked, to be honest, because in Germany, you go through a 3 years education and you stand in front of the International Chamber of Commerce and you have to pass your exam. And if you don't pass it, you don't pass it. There's no money you can push over there. There's no certificate you can buy for 3,000 euros. You just know your stuff or you don't. And if you don't, you don't get it. It's simple as that. And that's why I thought, okay, this is the education and society I grew up in. Maybe if I go to cruise ships, I get that professionalism I wanted to see in the world of floating hotels. And maybe I also get the feeling of community and belonging again, because when you look on a global scale, 50% of the population are women. And also when you look again on a global scale, in most hotels, you have people from many ethnicities working, and it's not just one kind. So I entered then the cruise ship industry, where I saw other things that I found almost equally as shocking.
And what are those things, if you don't mind sharing?
In specific, there was there's more than rude behavior towards the Filipino and South American housekeepers, stewards and stewardesses equally. So the officers, female and male, Greeks, Germans, British, all of them, would treat them as lesser humans. Starts off with their English sounding different, but then also I think their physical appearance and size also invited these officers to mistreat them. There was an occasion where I had to step in, and I mean there were others who were higher ranking than me, so there was this chief executive housekeeper, so she had many stripes on her epaulet, really above the housekeeping Filipino, tapping on her chest and going, if you don't do what I said, it will be bad for you. She said it with so much hate in her eyes, and the stewardess was cowering, and I just ducked under and in between her, and she was also much bigger than me, but I think I could take her any day. But I said, if you don't step away from her, you will regret it. So that almost caused the Filipinos to say, we want you as chief housekeeper. And I said, this is not going to happen. We're not doing a riot like this. So we're just going to continue working and we're going to watch each other's back. So what happened was that the human resources and the specific officers at play at that time, they singled me out and I became their target. So they didn't target the Filipinos anymore. So they targeted me. They pushed me physically on the side saying, I was wearing a blouse and was buttoned up, but the first button was open. She just punched me in my throat saying, you're running around like a slut. And I said, you touch me again, you'll see what's going to happen. Then they put me on night watch. So I was on night duty for days and days on end. And during the daytime, they would knock and bang on my door to get me to be sleep deprived and trying to get me to resign, which I didn't. Said, if you want to get rid of me, you have to fire me and pay me, and then I go.
When you talk about also the HR department being involved, how does that even work? Because I mean, you would think that the human resources department would have your back, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. I felt so stupid for believing that at one point in my life.
So how does that work? Like, were you able to talk to them and make a complaint, and then they were like, well, you know what, we can't help you, or they basically treated you really nicely and then they stabbed you in the back? Like, how did it work out?
Oh, they were very upfront. They said, we are here for the company and for the company policies. We need to keep this contained. So we hear that you may have been late, or how you're going to plan to do your shifts, or how you think you're going to progress your career within this company. And I said, I think I won't.
Right.
As simple as that. I said, you're not the only one who has jobs at offer. I said, the way you run this place and how you mistreat and how disrespectful you are with other human beings is just disgusting. So you're walking around like this is your kingdom. I said, you're not here to rule. You're here to serve.
And
after- so, yeah, I didn't make many friends in the senior department.
I can't imagine. So you went to the HR to complain, or you were called?
No, they took me. Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't like you ever made a complaint of what was happening. It's just like the situation that happened. You stood up for this girl, and this just was like the result of it. So, yeah.
And they asked if I want to make a complaint. I said, well, I can just generally complain about this and that behavior. And then they said, yes, the stewardess should, the housekeeper should make the complaint of being physically threatened. But of course they threatened her, so she says she doesn't want to raise a claim or a complaint.
Okay, so basically, and I think this is part of the problem, that we are not speaking up when we're given the opportunity to complain and say, you know, take this a little bit further, push the boundaries. We decide, no, I'm too scared. I'd rather take the bullying. I'd rather take the punishment than actually have something change, not only for myself, but for everybody else, right?
Yeah. But it took me also years to speak up. It's now for the first time I've been very candid and very unfiltered about my social or political views. I don't even would consider this political. It's just my humanitarian views.
Right.
Because before it didn't feel safe.
Why do you think that it took you so long to speak up? Like, why were you not feeling comfortable prior to now? You know, because in that moment that you had that scenario, right, in the cruise ship, you decided to just say, no, I'm just not anything.
That was just a reflex, because she looked scared. It was, I didn't think like the other ones who didn't say nothing. I've seen this in Germany as well, and wherever you walk, you see this. Once I was a 12-year-old girl sitting in the bus with my German friend, and there was a black student. He could not look more nerdy with his three pens in his chest pocket and the, you know, his backpack and glasses. He looked like right out of the nerd handbook. And then there was a bunch of drunk Germans with the jeans vest and all those stickers and application things on it, with the canned beer, going into the middle of the bus where it turns around. So they started pushing him around there. And no one said a word. Not the driver, not all the elderly, middle-aged, young adults, none of them. And my friend and I, we were 11, 12 years old. So without thinking, I stood up and said, hey, why don't you mess with someone from your size? Which, while I said it, I felt really stupid because I was nowhere near their size. And I think I could see my heart pumping from really right up my throat. I couldn't just feel it. I think I saw it coming all the way. And by the time, nobody had cell phones either. And I looked around and said, and you guys are looking on the floor. You're not going to find your courage there. And everyone was really quiet. And you could see that these drunk German man and woman were contemplating of grabbing me and pushing me around too. But then the bus driver stopped and they said, yeah, whatever, cussed at me and the typical things that say, and left the bus. So, yeah, I think many people see things. I maybe don't think enough before I say things that I see. And as a stewardess, very early on while I was in yachting, I kept my head down a lot. I didn't go out much to drink or fraternize with crew, because I didn't know who's friend or foe. Didn't know if I make friends with this blonde stewardess, if she's going to use any information to take my position or to sell me out, or, you know, if I'm friendly with this captain or that officer? Will they try to take advantage? So it's better to isolate yourself as well. On the other hand, I've met a lot of good people too. Unfortunately, from my perspective, it's not the majority. I've seen also many very good people leave the industry because of the dirty games, inequality, and sheer injustice that they saw.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. You're very passionate about inequality, and you know, there's a lot of things happening here, especially in America, and not just in America. America is just kind of like the hub at the moment. But this is something that has been happening for, I think, I don't know, at least I believe since humanity has been alive, you know. So previous to this recording, we had a show with a steward, a chief steward, who felt very passionate about feeling that she was being discriminated, and a lot of people that are not native English speakers been discriminated. And everything's like a fine line, right? Because there's discrimination and then there's preference.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so for example, I was recently talking to a girl who said, oh my God, I found this amazing girl, but I can't hire her because she doesn't fit the physical criteria of the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that discrimination or preference? Because I say this because the girl had the opportunity to come to the interview, do the interview. So for me, that means you have equal opportunity. You just literally didn't fit all the criteria that they're looking for in a preference, right? So
depends on the criteria. If it is like just the other day, I've read a post coming from a woman in the industry, which I thought she should know that it's not great to stand on the side with the oppressor, you know, it's not the better side to stand on, basically saying we're looking for a super fit, well-presented, none of it, except for one word saying experienced duetesses. But every other word was descriptive of their looks and also nationalities, which, you know, was British, Australian, South African. And they mean the white South Africans, of course.
Right.
So if they're looking for blonde models to waitress, then this is how, like, Las Vegas casinos advertise their hospitality positions. They're looking for models that can hold the tray.
Do you think that is discrimination or simply literally being transparent and saying, hey, we don't care if you know how to do the job. We just care that you look good. And this is what the position is about. So if this is you, apply for it. If this is not you, don't even bother.
Do you think this is the what the owner is looking for?
Some are, yeah.
And they equally also want to have their 1.5 million per meter yacht maintained well? If you look at all those owners' houses, and they have residences all over the shop. They have them in the Caribbean. They have them in Thailand. They have them in Switzerland. They have them in the Mediterranean and in London. And all of their household staff are locals. I've seen lots of blacks and Asians and all sorts of nationalities represented only on yachts and on jets. You see the blondes and whites.
I mean, I have worked on states and I've seen all sorts of nationalities and on yachts. I mean, the highest seafarers on earth are Filipinos, are not white people. And, you know, on big boats, most of the crew is Filipino.
But how many rise to the positions of becoming a lead deckhand, bosun, second, first officer, captain?
I do know, definitely, personally, I do know people that have, you know, from deck to captain now. I'm not saying that's the majority, of course, but this is also something very cultural. Because what I have found is that the other day I read a post of this woman, Filipino, who said, you know, she was talking about discrimination and how on her first job, she was only paid 800 euros because she was Filipino. And she decided to take it, even though she wasn't okay with it. She said, oh, whatever, I'm going to take it because this is like my first opportunity and I'm just going to go for it, right? And apparently she was also discriminated in other forms and ways. And then she goes on saying on the post that she also has this issue back home in Philippines. And I also got a recent message from a French woman who was also talking about discrimination and how French people are discriminated and blah, 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 blah. And how this whole yachting, like you said, British and, you know, English native speakers, right? And how mm-hmm. they are not given the opportunity as French because they're not native speakers, whatever. But then she goes on saying also on this message how French people also have the same issue in France finding jobs. And it kind of just made me think, well, this is obviously something that yachting is just a mirror of, mm-hmm. right? Like yachting is not the actual problem. This is bigger than yachting. And this mm-hmm. goes from, you know, cultural backgrounds, cultural things. And at the end of the day, I believe in my personal opinion, this is also a very personal thing because you don't have to take that job. You don't have to say, I have to take 100 euros when you know that is not correct. You can wait for a better opportunity. But if you don't value yourself, then obviously you cannot manifest that type of environment, right? Because it goes...
But sometimes it's hardship. I don't know where... For someone to take 800 euros knowing that they actually worth 2-3 times that money... Maybe she needed the money. Maybe the mother was ill. I don't know her background. I definitely agree that it's way too little. But for someone to still take that job, that looks desperate. And I don't think somebody would take this unless they really needed it.
Well, she said on the post that basically she took it because she needed a break in. You know, she needed that first door to open. Mm-hmm. And that's why she took it. And I agree, maybe most of the time people take these jobs because they're like, fuck it, like this is my opportunity or I really need the money right now, so I'm just gonna take it. And I understand where this can happen, but this is part of the problem because people are continuing to say this is okay. And then on the back complain about it, but not actually do anything to change it.
So what could she do to change it? Because maybe now she's still in the, like before, I didn't do much to change anything about this. I rose the ranks instead. I kept to myself. I kept my mouth shut. I looked away when I saw certain stewardesses mingling with guests or the other way around. But I just looked away. Said, no, it has nothing to do with me. Not my, sorry to say it so crude, not my vagina, not my business. And I just focused on my studies and to rise the ranks and build a company.
So then, what has changed for you now? Like, what would you tell your younger self to do now that you're on the other side, right? Where you're like, you know what? I'm ready to talk about it. I'm ready to speak up. And I won't take shit if this ever happened to me again.
Well, honestly, I don't know what I could have done much more different because I really tried to keep a low profile. I didn't argue with management. I just, when I was pushed hard by, one point it was an owner, in many situations it was a captain or another crew member who felt so omnipotent that they have power over you. Resigned quietly. Sure.
My question is, what would you tell your younger self to do?
I think, I know it's not going to sound nice, but I think I would tell myself, earn much more money, much faster.
Yet you're not telling your younger self it's okay to speak up.
Every time I spoke up, I lost the job.
So you're basically telling your younger self, keep shush, try to make money fast and get the fuck out. And this is the problem.
And don't become a victim. Just blend in as much as you can, because you cannot fight this alone. And you cannot find it, or you cannot fight it from a position of weakness. Now, how is a junior stewardess going to speak up when somebody approaches her or grabs her or pushes her against the wall, grabs under her skirt? What's she going to say? To whom? To maybe the chief stewardess who is actually maybe dating that person who did this to you? You're going to get fired. You're going to go to the captain? To what? To fire his right hand? No, it's your job again. You're going to go to management? Oh, they don't want to deal with this. They're going to react like HR did on the cruise ship, going, maybe this boat you, and you should hold on and look out for something else.
And you, then comes port state flag. After state flag, then port state, then...
They don't want to do anything about this either. There's been reports of, on cruise ships, especially rape victims. None of those port state authorities want to take responsibility or take that case. They just go, why don't you just take your passport, go home, lick your wounds, and that's it. Nobody wants to deal with flag or wherever she's going to be dropped off to the airport.
If this is something that has been going on, right, for so long, and we're not able to get the help that we need because we're talking, you know, which is not the reality of things, because the majority of people that are going through this are not speaking up. This is the number one problem. People are not speaking up. People are putting their head down, shushing themselves and saying, you know what, fuck it. Like you said, your younger self, make the money fast and run. So
yeah, but you know, it's not fair to ask crew to speak up. Why does the weakest person has to carry the most? I believe that the people who should be protecting them or should give back them up, they should speak up. And to me, that is management, that is yacht brokers, that is yacht builders, owners' representatives. And every time I look at those groups of people, I only see white men. Maybe the occasional white woman, but the majority of men. I don't see in their rooms that there are sitting women at the table who should be part of the decision making. And I don't see people of ethnicity who, you know, we're building everything we're building and we're working is on the backs of those people. Right. And this is where they should speak up. And this is where they should make a change and not ask the smallest chain, the smallest link to carry the brunt and carry the weight.
I agree with you. But I also agree that for that to actually happen, you need the masses, which is the crew, because we make the difference. Like we are the ones that are victimized. We are the ones that are also the perpetrators in many of the cases.
Some of them don't dare to protect the other because they know, okay, she's going to get fired. If I back her up, I get fired too. I'm sorry. Better you than me. I understand that. And I don't, honestly... To me, I give a carte blanche to every crew member from if somebody cares about my opinion. I don't care what they've said or done or seen, because it's like going into, you're seeing a gunfire and you're running in there. How are you going to help? How are they supposed to help? From what position?
So, but
they're starting on their back foot.
That's basically the same thing as saying, I'm not going to talk because I may get fired. That's literally staying on the shooting and not doing anything about it. And that's not going to help you or anybody else, because at the end of the day, in my personal opinion, if you are willing to stay on a job like that, then you definitely don't value yourself at all at a personal level, because you know that this is not okay, and yet you are feeling, I may get fired. Who gives a shit? You should be quitting. You shouldn't even get fired. You should fucking quit, because this shit is not okay.
You quit and you go back to what? Waitressing or working in a hotel or getting married, and then you hide away and all your potentials immediately dry up. Instead, I've seen many really, really excellent people leaving the industry, and you could see that their soul broke a little because of the ugliness they saw in that industry. Because they felt completely undervalued. But on the other, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're only seeing one side of the coin of where I leave the industry or I leave the boat because, you know, I've been a victim. And then I say, you know, fuck this. I don't want to do this. Like, this is not okay. I'm going to get out. That doesn't mean my life has ended. That doesn't mean I'm not going to thrive into something else or something better, even a new boat, because I've seen many crew members that have actually found amazing boats after they had really shit boats where they have been, you know, victimized in many different shapes and forms. So obviously quitting doesn't mean, or speaking up and getting fired doesn't mean that your career has ended, right?
Not necessarily, no, yeah. But you know, some careers have burned like that.
But to the, I mean, in my opinion, it's like, yeah, maybe you burn a bridge, but a bridge that was already burned, that was already broken. That wasn't really a bridge because it was only a bridge to more discrimination, to more sexual abuse, to more sexual harassment, to more things that are not, you know, lifting you.
But once you're treated this way, I do believe that girls think, okay, it is what it is. This is what people think of me. This is the extent they're going to use me for. And then you at some point maybe believe their perception of you, and this is what you limit yourself to. You know how many girls I see when I work when I was working still on land? They were basically prostituting themselves for a cocktail and a dinner. Because, you know, he pays, and then, of course, yeah, he's allowed to give me a kiss, and yes, okay, he's allowed to touch, and fine, you know, you paid your dues kind of thing. And I think if you treat it this way for a long time, at some point you go, yeah, it is what it is. But I believe that we can make a change. I don't expect crew to speak up with their name, because I know for a fact, because you saw me on Instagram how I did a few polls, and I've had pretty much 2, 3, 4 times a day conversation with stewardesses and deckhands and their experience on racism and sexism. And I'm not a softie, but I cried a lot these days when I heard what they went through. And I definitely never, ever going to give any details away from what they've shared, because they were physically and emotionally scared to tell me those things.
I understand there is a percentage of the victims or survivors, or whatever you want to call them, that are not willing to speak up, or at least, and then there's some that are willing to say, you know, I am ready. This is my face. I don't care. This is the truth. Bring it on. I want to make a change. And then there's the middle where it's like, I'm okay speaking about it, but I don't want to be, you know, anonymously. Yeah. So let's talk about something like Weinstein in Hollywood. Let's talk about Epstein. How did these men were able to pay for what they did? Because people...
Did they pay for what they did? They didn't really pay for what they did.
Well, I believe in a way, yes. Because these victims were able to speak up. And yes, there was a massive trajectory. And there was a lot of back and forth. And there was a lot of, maybe this is not going anywhere. But at the end of the day, it did went somewhere.
And Epstein lost his life. I don't think that that is the equivalent to justice, because all his possessions and his private island went to his brother. Weinstein paid a fee and he got, he stood in front of the judge and he got sentenced, but he's still producing movies. Only one who did pay for it and doesn't get anything out of it was Bill Cosby. So, yeah, he was part of the perpetrators in the whole Me Too movement, and none of the TV series that he did is airing or can be bought or is on YouTube anywhere, even though the show that he did had so many beautiful moral values. But he was the only one who was really fully punished, and interestingly enough, he does not have an Steen at the end of his name, and he is a person of color. He's black.
But don't you
everyone else did not get punished.
I mean, I guess it's a personal thing of what you believe punishment should be, right? At the end of the day, that's a very personal thing of like what justice means for you, what justice should look like for you. This is something very different for every person, you know? It could be monetary, it could be they are physically, you know, punished, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. The point is that because this woman said, I am gonna talk about it, I am gonna come out and I'm gonna speak about it, change happened. More women were inspired and they felt supported and they felt safe to say, you know what, I am also gonna talk about it because this is fucked up and this shit needs to change. But what I see in the yachting industry is that even though there's a little bit of sort of movement kind of going on the background, that's all it is, on the background.
We're not done yet though, so it's maybe too early.
Hush. We're going to talk about it now to other women, but we're not yet willing to say what's actually going on. Because here's the thing. I can talk about it, but I actually haven't been sexually assaulted on a boat. So I don't have the story. I don't have the true experience. I don't have the evidence. My words don't carry that power because I'm not a victim of that. I am a victim of other things, but of that specifically, I am not. So when the people that have been the victim, those people talk about it, that's where the power lies. Don't you think?
I can tell you many stories and stories where when people then go, I'm so sorry this happened to you, I always feel like, I'm sorry, I can't buy shit from that. I want things to change and I want them to change from the top. I can share any story that you would like to know. I don't mind. I just will not mention names.
Do you have a personal story that you?
I do, yeah. I always thought actually until to the last few weeks where I did the polls and people shared their experience of inequality, I was under the impression that pretty much everyone went through something like I did, pretty much experienced everything except for actual rape. That would have been, maybe then I would have been able to tick all the boxes, but I've been pinned down on the bed, I've been groped, I've been slapped, I've been threatened, I've asked for help over the radio, and I realized that the bridge turned their radios off when I was trying to get out. The security didn't let me go out, and the only way, and I was contemplating in my mind, should I just stop fighting and just, you know, take one for the team? Because I realized the more I got physically against it, the more riled up the other person got. And the face of a man changes in his eyes when that instinct, that raw behavior kicks in. You see the pupils expanding. You see how they get physically stronger on you, and you feel like, oh, shit, all the workout I'm doing means nothing because he is physically much stronger than I am. Well, the only way I got away with it is because of my big mouth. I talked him off me because I've mentioned his son and childhood experiences and the wife and anything to emotionally engage him, and well, kind of talked him off me, and then it got a bit weird where he was then braiding my hair and shared childhood stories of his own. So then you know you just escaped a very awful experience and you're just sitting there and someone's going like, yeah, like you're some sort of doll. Okay, this was fun. Let me get you a drink.
And this is
quickly get out of there.
This is a safety, like a security guard. Like, who was this person?
Was a wealthy person. It was not crew.
Like a guest or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and what do you do after?
I resigned. I was asked to stay longer and do the season, and in the typical victim mentality. I had the bad conscience. I went, yes, I should finish the season and do this properly because it's not fair to, you know, the owner and the family and everyone else, regardless of what's fair to you or not. And I did a proper handover and everything. I did all the lists and the keys and trained the upcoming stewardesses, explained to them that they need to be careful when these people drink a certain amount and whatsoever. Management offered me an apartment to be mine. Just like that, I declined. And to be very honest with you, I did contemplate it for a little bit, like, oh, wow, we would get an apartment in Monaco. That's amazing. And at the same time, I could see my grandfather right there saying, and in which mirrors will you gonna look? And I went, okay, no, thanks. No to the apartment.
Basically, they were buying you out.
Yeah, well, they wanted me to stay also a little bit longer, like to be the summer girlfriend or something, you know, that this will be worth my while, those kind of sentences.
Right. And then you quit.
They had no interest of making this better.
Right.
They were thinking of capitalizing on this.
And you quit, and then you said no to the apartment. And what happened?
I resigned, and they said, we're not going to accept your resignation. Obviously, I resigned when we were alongside, because I didn't want to do this while we were still at anchor, because I was afraid that they're going to withhold my passport or anything like that. So I did it during the daytime. I had my things already packed, because I knew the moment when nobody answered my radio call that you are on your own. No one there to help you. And that's basically it, you know. Then they asked me to take the resignation back. So they ripped it up. And then I said, okay, by the end of the season, find another stewardess. I can train the ones that are here, do the proper handover. I've worked pretty much all my leave period, always did, which in hindsight looks like a dumb thing to do. But and in the end, season was over, last trip. The guests and everyone went around, shook everyone's hand. And the second they left, they said, you're fired. So, well, okay, cool. Fine.
Okay. And then did you complain about what happened to somebody?
Everybody knew. The captain high-fived me for not sleeping with them. Like, this is great. I have so much respect for you. And I was like, yeah, thanks. I have no respect for you, though.
Right. And went further and make a complaint about this vessel, about the captain, about the owner, about the guests?
To whom?
Well, there's many options. There's the port state, there's the flag state, there's the police, there's the maritime, you know, whether it's the Navy or the Coast Guard or whatever, depending on each country, right? Whoever is in charge of the maritime.
Yeah, but who's in charge of the maritime system in that country is also, and we're talking European. So there's a yacht marina. The yacht marina spends money. The money goes into the politics and the police and similar. No one would have been interested in that story. I mean, my own colleagues high-fived me for, you know, not being a slut, so to say.
What about
They came and said, you know, this is so bad what happened to you, and oh, I have a wife and children, this is so horrible. And I know that they were indirectly apologizing, but also explaining that the only reason why they didn't step in is because they were afraid to lose their job, which I, funnily enough, I understand. There were occasions before where they made you swim with them at night. Otherwise, they would wake up the other stewardesses. If you don't swim with me tonight, I will wake up the other girls, and they would send the security to wake them up. And you know, they cannot lock themselves in the cabin because the captain has the master key and all of that, while the managers are sitting on the aft deck with them at the same time, enjoying an evening, discussing business. You're then forced to strip and swim. So on these occasions, they would come and apologize as crew members later, but there's not much they can do either. And then what, you walk as crew symbolically off the boat together?
Wait. There's not much they can do, or there's not much they are willing to do? because there's a lot they can do.
Well, is there though?
Yes.
Management should have done something.
But why do we always have to say government has to do something, management has to do something? What about us, the ones that are going through it, the crew, that we're more than them? We are higher numbers. We're the ones in the middle of it. Why are we not taking the fucking responsibility and doing something when we see shit is not okay? Why are we not stepping in? You already stepped in when that Filipino was pinned down. And you said,
now I step in. Well, because I came from yachting before. So that's on cruise ships, it was easy because you see cruise ships and you go, yeah, you can earn a lot of money, but you are very tied down to much, much more company policies. So that was easy for me to step up and go, oh, you know what, I can leave this industry, no problem. With yachting, it's different. It's such an intertwined community, like they like to say it, which it doesn't feel like a community when I look at the ranks of yacht management companies. That is just a whole other business level and deal they're doing. With crew, it does feel like a community. And every crew member I've met since, in the years that I've passed in this industry, have been really wonderful, young, passionate souls. That's why I don't expect them to step in and lose their head over it. What I expect, or what I hope, is with the polls and with an interview like this, or with an interview with another magazine that is coming up, or with the way I force myself onto the super yacht group, Martin Redman, forcing them to take this topic up for the next super yacht forum with all the white boys clubs there are, and usually sit at the table. I demand a seat to speak on behalf of crew and women and people of color to be heard. But I can do this now. As a junior stewardess, as an interior manager for many years, as a PA to an owner, you cannot. You did your part bit in bit, but never enough. I've stood up to many chief officers in my years that I rose the ranks and said, you cannot behave this way. You're behaving like a dictator. I said the same thing to a stewardess who said, what, then I, at least I got the watch for it as a present, or this Louis Vuitton suitcase with my initials on. That, yeah, this is the price you put instead of the value that you should have. And trying to help people, because some girls do play along because they think, yeah, okay, so this is all the opportunities you're going to give me. I'll take this opportunity and I hope I build something else out of it. Or they go in very naively, don't think much about it at all, that the repercussions that it could have to their own soul, but also to how these men would behave towards other women. And this is a big topic, but I do hope that these stories will empower crew to anonymously come forward, share their stories, so we get the statistics right.
Why does it have to be anonymously?
Because I understand that they're scared to lose their jobs. I've spoken with crew members who say, I cannot even repost, even though you speak out of my heart, but management is observing our Instagram accounts.
So
you are among, that's what I said before, when I was in the yachting industry, I was always very careful because I never knew who is friend or foe. And I believe there's many stewardesses and stewards and deckhands and officers out there. And I've met a few captains as well where I thought, wow, I wish I would have served under you instead of the guys I've worked for. Because I have the right moral compass. And I think that is a policy. And that's why I go back to brokers, yacht builders, management companies who post those hypocritical comments of International Women's Day and blah blah blah, but say nothing about the inequality that they, you know, hold up themselves within their own ranks. They're all there to speak for the International World Ocean Day and oh, the bad plastic. What about your bad society? What about your bad self? During the Monaco boat show, I don't know, at one Lursen party or another party from a management company, one high up the rank grabbed my ass. And I looked at her and I said, you sure this was a good idea? And he said, well, it felt good. And I thought, wow, how can you be so cocky? How can you be so rude in the middle of everyone? We had a 3-minute conversation and you think you can behave this way.
So my question to you is, this happened to you. You know the name of this man. Why are you not calling
him?
Why are you not saying, be aware of this motherfucker? His name is
because
Black.
This is where he comes. Because on the very same evening, or the next evening, he had a woman who's a supplier for yachts sitting on his lap, appeasing him and rubbing up to him as in like, and if I'm nice to you, then you buy from me. Isn't it nice sitting on his lap like a...
So because somebody was willing to play his game, that means that you're not willing to call him out? That makes no sense.
What does it do any good if I call out all those guys? It's just going to come across as slandering and as bad-mouthing them. I'd rather take this, put it into my bank, write a statistic over it, and address it at the Superyacht Forum where those guys have to listen and not have... Let's say they look at this conversation, they go, oh, it's a bunch of women slagging off men, maybe because she's lesbian or, you know, she cannot find a guy to marry. This is the typical things you will hear. Mm-hmm. I don't know how often I've been told or asked if I'm lesbian just because I don't want to date that particular person.
I don't know. But if you tell me, hey, this captain name, blah, 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 or this owner, blah, 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 or this...
This was a CEO, by the way, of a company.
So, whatever it is, if you give me names and then I have that information, I can make a more conscious choice if I come across this person, if I actually want to interact with this person, or if I don't want to interact with this person or vessel or whatever it is. But when it's just a story, but nobody's actually saying who is the person behind the story, this perpetrator will continue to do this because nobody's holding him accountable or her, because it could be also a woman doing this shit, you know,
like a unicorn.
I mean,
I know what you mean, but to me it's about the
again,
even bigger
hushing.
Well,
speaking up is not okay, even though here we are saying speak up. I'm willing to speak up, yet again we're constantly saying it's not okay to speak up.
No, I disagree. I think to me it is like if I go into a fight or into a war, I count my bullets and I count my weapons. I'm not going to do the what's this guy's name from Looney Tunes, you know, that comes in all guns blazing, you know, the one with the red mustache.
Yeah, I can't.
Yosemite Sam, that guy, like, with interviews like this, I already feel like I'm shooting all over the shop with the different topics that we struck on. But by naming now randomly all the different boats, CEOs, owners, reps, brokers, managers, suppliers, and there is no way you haven't come across these men by actual name. I'm sure you've met them as well. I just don't feel that this is the right time to address them publicly or on a personal level. I said my piece to them at that time. Some I said it more diplomatic. Some I said it very unfiltered. But what I want to achieve is, while I'm still counting my bullets, I want to sit at the table with them and I want to hear them change their own policies. It starts with them so that everyone feels safe enough to speak freely, because crew does not feel safe. And even I, as a supplier and as a consultant in the industry, I don't feel safe. And I know I'm jeopardizing my company by speaking up, because I've had owners' representatives, same as on board, even worse so it feels like, groping me or trying to force a kiss on me, or, you know, trying to, when you don't play along, steal your concepts and your interfaces of the app or my actual physical cleaning products that I've developed over years, go to competitors and say, build it like this, build it like she did. And the competitors come back to me and say, look, this guy is trying to do this and that, which is nice of them. And I hold them really up high and I'm thankful that they came back around and told me that. because they could have also just, you know, taken it apart and rebuilt it. And all my years of investment and research has been for nothing. Mm-hmm. But I do want to, in the bigger picture, not just get justice for what happened to me. I don't care about that. I care about making a difference for the current crew and the women in this industry. That is the reason why I could make lots of money to do training, to give certificates within the tutorials and the training material and everything else. But I want this knowledge that is in the same app to stay there and everyone to have access to it without charging extra. So basically, this is free training on black and white information, knowledge, facts, all based in one app. There's nothing that speaks against it other than it gives more control to crew and more transparency to owners. Maybe these are the two reasons why management company have an issue.
So to wrap it up, what is your advice for crew that are currently going under or experiencing discrimination, sexism, racism, sexual harassment, work harassment? You know, all this stuff that we have been talking about. What's your advice for the people that are actually experiencing it right now?
Rule number one for me to them would be protect yourself. You cannot help someone else if you haven't been able to protect yourself. And if for whatever reason they stay in this job, not judging, I understand fully why you stay in a job, want to stay employed and earn money. Don't see another way out for this time being. I think one is protect yourself, and second is gather proof. If you can, audio or video record an assault or verbal abuse, whichever it is, and have a backup plan. Like what I did is I made sure that I can get off the boat with the clothes on my back or with my suitcase. You know, yeah, basically protect yourself.
Okay. And what do you say to crew who are willing to maybe share their story and help you have, you know, because I truly admire what you're doing. And I really, you know, like I'm backing you up, girl. You know what I mean? Like I'm right there for you. But I really feel that without the power of community, of stories, because humanity relates through stories. Stories yes. move people. Yes. Without the power of stories, you don't have that push. You know what I mean? It's almost like one woman talking on behalf of who? There's no story behind it. You know what I mean? Like for those people that are ready to be willing to speak up, how can they, you know, support you in this movement that you're in the middle of?
Well, as you said, you're supporting this. So you're huge. To me, women like you are a huge deal. There's another young woman, she is doing a documentary. There's another woman, she is building training and education, and there's a legal advisor who's helping to pass things through the IMO. There's a German filmmaker, they're looking into producing also documentary. There is a few, not many, but there's two magazines who are looking to put articles out. So I think all together we have a loud enough voice to push to be heard. For crew to come out and actually show face, I'm afraid this will take a little bit more action from our sides for them to feel secure. And before managers and builders and brokers don't sit at the table and finally acknowledge the issue. Just like as an example, the whole Black Lives Matters was a long discussion, and now slowly people are going, yes, you know what, it's not all lives matters. It is actually Black Lives Matters, because semantics of going over that, yes, all lives matters, is silly, because obviously not all lives matter. Same with, you know, back in the days when they said, oh, she was probably raped because she was wearing that skirt. And it took years for society and for men and even women, but especially men in the society, to understand, oh, it's not that she provoked it. Oh, it's not blaming the victim. It is actually, in fact, the perpetrator that we need to look at. So they need to come to the table and acknowledge that there is an issue. We get those people at the table, we can go to the next step, because the statistics and the polls have revealed a not pretty picture. So it was over 100 people who participated, and my platform doesn't even have 1,000 followers. It was going through also some other platforms. But if we in the next step do a statistics or a petition that people can sign, and I would never reveal anyone's emails or names with it, but I want to start a petition that people should speak up if they want to change and equality in this industry, then we have many, many more different figures and actual email addresses and names, which again, I will never give to management or whoever asked for it. They just can't have it. So, but they have a bigger number behind it. And then we can make this progress that you would like to see. And I think at some point, people will be brave enough to speak about that.
That I would like to see?
Oh, we all, yeah. We're all in this, and I can share my stories. I have no issue with that. But the stories I've heard from other girls, I feel strongly for them, for what they've seen and what they've experienced. And that makes me more upset than what I've experienced. Mm. And especially that silence in this industry from our so-called industry leaders towards this whole topic. I've spoken with one young lady from Yachting Ventures. She tried to address this topic, and I think she's British. Beautiful blonde young woman. And when she tried to address this topic amongst her peers or superiors in Monaco a few years back, she said that they said, but think about all the bright sides. If they still think this way, we need to make them listen, and they need to acknowledge so we can make a change together. But they need to come to the table too.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, it also, the what you call the leaderships or the higher ranks or whatever, they're really just mirroring the lower ranks as well, because the crew, right, are not willing to look at what it is. They're saying, well, let me look at the bright side as well. So I'm going to stick in this job. I'm going to do this. I'm going to, like you said, it's not my vagina. It's not my problem. You know, I'm going to look at the bright side. I have a job. I'm just going to focus on my shit. I'm going to flow and fuck it if she got raped. You know what I mean? So this is the problem. The problem starts with us. We need to be the change we want to see. The big guys, that will happen. But we have to make the change today. Each of us as an individual have the opportunity and the choice to consciously choose differently in the moment where we see something that is not okay. But it's up to
each. I agree, but
that choice. And I want to make that very clear, because it doesn't matter if you want to come up front and speak about it. Ideally, that would be awesome, because that's what we really want. We want to speak up about it. We want to have that
You feel very strongly about this, but yeah. At the same time, you say you've never been a victim of an assault.
Of rape? No, I haven't. On a boat? No, I have not been raped. Absolutely not.
So
my mother was a victim of that, yes. So I do have a background in that. I have dealt with a victim, right? A survivor of that. And I understand what has happened, you know, through different transitions, you know, what she has done to heal. And I got to tell you, if you don't speak about it, it ain't going to heal. That's the number one thing we all have to understand. Speaking about it heals you. Any trauma. Talking about it moves the energy out. It liberates you. It fucking liberates you from it.
I agree with that. Ever since I spoken up about it and attacked a few people on social media, when I say attacked, I posted on their walls and said that, where's your voice here? Or why is this another white guy elevated to his C-level executive or whatever it was, basically accusing them of keeping their elitism and inequality up. Ever since then, I feel liberated, but I also feel fear.
Absolutely.
And, it's totally, and I do think, I think crew does do their part when they see some inequality or injustice. Because some of them went also to me and said, I'm so sorry that this happens to you, and la la la. Well, I was still working on the boat. And that's all the capacity they had in that moment to show support or do something. For now, I'm thankful for all the crew that has contacted me, and I hope to hear more from them. And some of them are speaking now amongst their neighboring boats about these topics. And 2012 or 8 when I started, 12 when I was another yacht, I've never seen crew so engaged with those emotional and social topics and political topics almost.
Right.
And then to see this now within the generations is amazing. And I'm stunned by the mindset that most of the crew hold. And I've high hopes for them that these generations and the upcoming generations of yachtsmen and professional yacht crew will make a change. It starts with that one woman who's building legislation, the other one who's doing a documentary with you, holding podcasts and interviews, and the rest will follow.
Absolutely.
And they will feel, that's why when I go back to how I make a difference also within my profession, is I want to give always this knowledge and training so people can build on their skills and they don't have to contemplate about, should I now be nice with him so I keep my job or I can raise the ranks, or should I build on my skills because I can trust my abilities and work from there? Because often women are just given that one currency, and that is their looks. And limit, right. Most of the time are limited or get limited to that. And I think if we give them access and we fight for more tools, and that the heads of departments are treated equally and with the same respect, then we can level up or come closer to the equality we want. And that again brings me back to, in the room, what did court justice said, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in the room where the decisions are made, the woman should always sit at the table. And that's what brings me back to management companies. I don't see many women at the table.
Well, I thank you on behalf of everybody in the industry for wanting to be that woman on the table, because everybody's doing their piece of, you know, their little rice, right? On the bigger scale, you know, you are doing that. I'm having a platform for people can come on and, you know, share their vision and their mission and speaking up. Everybody's doing their part. So yes. I want to thank you for doing your part and wanting to, you know, take it to the higher ranks and, you know, be heard and be part of a forum and be part of decision-making, you know, hopefully in what's coming soon and not too far from now. So yes. Thank you, Margarita, for being part of the show. I think we cover a lot of things. We got real.
We sure did.
Yeah. So just a quick reminder for those who are out there, if you have something to share, wisdom to pass on, if you want to just fucking speak up, here's your platform. Come and share it. We can definitely do it anonymously if you don't feel you know, that you're ready to put your face online. That's totally doable. You can even write it. I can share it. We can work around it, but it's time. There's no more time to be hiding. We can't hide any longer. We need to actually face, you know, and become the change that we want to see. It starts with us. Remember that. So thank you so much. And until next time, I'm Marianne, your host for Uncensored at Yachting International Radio. And see you next time. Thank you, Margarita.